supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we have a double-barreled question of the week about lilacs this time out. We'll be talking about how to prevent disease and that nasty white mold that shows up on their trunks, and what to do when, quote, bees come and start stripping the bark off of your lilacs and other trees as well. But mostly it's a phone call show up to then, cats and kittens, and you know what that means. We're taking that heap and helping of your questions, comments, tips, tricks, etc. at 1-888-346-9499. Howard, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi.
Hello, Howard. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great. I love your show.
Well, thank you, sir. Where are you?
I'm in Newtown, Pennsylvania.
Okay, very good. That's in Bucks County, right?
Correct.
What can we do for Howard in the suburbs?
All right. Well, I'm a professional chef. I use fresh herbs all year round, and even when I cook at home for my wife and kids. And instead of paying the price for them, which they can be quite expensive at times, I'd like to start growing my own. So I wanted to know if I can grow them all year round. What, if any, you know, do well in our colder climate, or would it be best to grow them indoors?
Well, have you done any gardening outdoors? Do you have a backyard vegetable garden or anything like that?
I do. I have a small one. No, I haven't been growing herbs, just some tomatoes and some squash, some green beans.
Okay. Do you have raised beds? You growing in flat ground?
Flat ground.
Okay. I want you to move up, and this fall I want you to build at least one raised bed.
Okay.
Frame it out to be 4 foot wide by as long as you can fit. If it's a tight space, 4 feet. If it's a bigger space, make it 8 feet long. Because that's going to help you understand the tactics you'll be using when you do move indoors. Now, I want you to keep some small flat ground area, because where you are, there is a moderate chance that you could grow rosemary and it would survive winter outdoors.
Just rosemary?
Well, rosemary is the dicey herb. There's no guarantee it would die or live over winter. It depends on your microclimate, your protected area, or your unprotected area. I can tell you in Center City, Philly, rosemary lives through every winter. So with you, it kind of depends on how close you are to the city, what kind of protected area, but I would at least give it a chance and experiment with some rosemary outside. I'll tell you, sage will survive all winter long. But the difference here is that the sage will kind of die back to the ground and return the following year, like a lot of your perennial herbs. Rosemary stays viable and cuttable and usable outdoors. Even if your rosemary did die, quote, over winter, we're talking January or February, so you would get a lot of cutting off that up to then. And obviously, you would want to grow your herbs outdoors as much as you could. Now, what do we have indoors that replicates a greenhouse or a solarium or a bay window where you have really extravagant amount of natural light?
In my kitchen, I do not have a window or a windowsill to continue growing those herbs. That's why I wanted to know what I can do all year round outside.
Only rosemary, and it might not make it through the winter. Marjoram. I don't know if you know the difference between oregano and marjoram.
Sure do.
Well, the difference to a gardener is oregano will not live through the winter and marjoram always will. So 99% of the, quote, oregano people are growing.
That's
is exactly right. The bottom line here, if you don't already have one of these big bay windows or a solarium attached to your house, it's probably not cost effective, and it would probably be better for you to contract with somebody who has a heated greenhouse. Because if you have a heated greenhouse, or even a greenhouse that is attached to your house and you know, gets that heat support by being attached to your house as opposed to freestanding, you can grow virtually anything in that all winter long. But even in the wintertime, a greenhouse with all that glass and all that light coming in can keep things alive. And they're very addictive if you have the room. Greenhouses can be purchased very inexpensively these days. Again, the more they're attached to a house, the less money you have to spend to keep them warm. But otherwise, you're really fighting a losing battle.
I appreciate your help. Thank you very much.
All right.
That's why I will continue to listen to your show. Love it.
If you get a greenhouse, man, you'll never go back.
Super. Thank you for your advice. I appreciate it.
Take care.
Bye.
1-888-346-9499. Abby, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing good, Ab. How are you?
Good, good.
And where is Abby good?
Frankfort, Michigan.
Oh, is it chilly up there yet?
It's getting there. It's not as bad as it could be.
Yeah, well, that's what everybody says out there. Oh, yeah, it's minus 30, but it's not bad. It's a dry cold, you know?
Right, right.
Yeah. All right, what can we do for you, Ab?
Well, I have this Mystery X fig tree, and I don't even remember where I got it, but I had it in a pot in the house, and it would make leaves, and then they would fall off. And so I thought, okay, this year I'm putting it outside. So I put it outside, and it grew almost like a bush, like it spread out instead of going straight up like a tree. And it's gorgeous. It made probably 30 new leaves, and it's doing so good. And now it's going to be cold, and do I have to bring it in? And if I bring it in, how do I make sure it doesn't do that again?
Okay, we can do this. Now, the fig family, the ficus family, includes many members, including the edible figs, plants, and a lot of house plants, including the one we call ficus, the most common office plant. But you have no idea what you have.
Well, I looked online, and it looked like the Mystery X. I mean, that was a kind of fig tree.
Really?
And yeah.
I've never heard that term before. X is usually a sign of a hybrid plant that's been crossed with a very different plant.
Well, it did show a fruit on it.
Oh, okay. So this is a bearing tree.
Yeah, I'm going to guess, yes.
So it really never belonged indoors, but you're in Michigan. It's still in the pot, right?
No, it's out in the ground.
It's in the ground. Okay. Is it in an exposed area? Is the area it's in kind of protected at all?
No, and it gets really windy there.
Okay, so here's what we're going to do soon. And you got to trust me here.
All right.
We're going to soak the base of the plant with water.
Okay.
Until we can rock the plant back and forth.
Okay.
Okay? Then we're going to rock the plant back and forth until we can actually push it down towards the ground, in which we will have dug a shallow grave.
Okay.
You with me?
Yeah, I think.
You'll dig a hole about a foot deep, big enough to accommodate the tree all around. You will rock it so that the roots aren't broken apart, so that the root ball stays whole.
Okay.
And you will lay the tree down in the trench.
So sideways?
Sideways.
Okay.
And then you will cover it all with soil.
Make
sure you cover the root ball. You may need to actually dig a slightly deeper hole down at that end to make sure you get most of the root ball under the frost line.
Okay.
Okay. And then we're going to shovel some dirt over it. We're going to shred up a ton of leaves and throw those on top of it. Some people would put old carpeting over it. The idea is we literally are going to bury this tree alive.
Okay.
And then you're just going to have to live with yourself all winter long.
Okay.
And in the spring, when the rest of your plants start growing again, you're going to get a friend. You're going to go remove all of the covering. You're going to lift the body out of the grave and stand it straight up again and replant it. And if you have done this successfully, in other words, if you haven't been a coward, if you actually did what I said, by the time you dig it up, it would not be unusual to see new growth on the plant already. Where you are, this is the best way to protect a fig over winter. And it may seem extreme, but this is done all over the country by people who love figs, who are growing them in really dicey climates, who've been bitten when they've wrapped the tree to protect it over winter. They've lost a lot of the tree to winter damage.
Yeah.
Better to just get it under the frost line, especially where you are with your short season, so that when you set it up again, there shouldn't be much winter damage, if any, on the tree. Then it'll be able to grow all season long, and you may actually start to get some serious fig action at the end of next summer.
Yeah, that would be good. I would like that.
But that's the only thing I would recommend where you are, is the trenching method. And if you go online and look up burying your fig tree, you'll see all kind of stories like this.
Okay. Well, great. I appreciate this.
All right.
All righty. I'll see you.
Be brave, Abby.
Thank you. You too.
Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and pull up the last of my summertime plants and replace them with a late run of lettuce and spinach and the very last of my garlic cloves. But don't you go earthing no alliums just yet, because we'll be right back with answers to your lilac questions and more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by the Espoma Company, makers of Biotone Starter Plus for new transplants, full of beneficial microbes and mycorrhiza for deeper roots and stronger plants. Espoma, a natural in the garden since 1929. And by Harvest Right. Harvest Right's home freeze dryer allows you to preserve your own freeze-dried food that can last 25 years. Meat, fruit, vegetables, and ice cream can be freeze-dried at home. More at harvestright.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, lovely lilacs. At least they're lovely when you don't get that white moldy stuff on their trunks and their branches and sometimes their leaves. And they're lovely when there aren't bee-like creatures stripping away the bark to do Lord knows what. We'll tell you what they're doing with that bark, how to prevent their doing it, and how to keep those lilacs healthy and happy when we get to the question of the week. In the meantime, though, lots more of your fabulous phone calls. At 1-888-346-9499. Hanna, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hello.
Hello, Hanna. How are you?
I am just fine.
And where is Hanna fine?
I am fine in Philadelphia and Wilmington.
Oh, so you got long legs.
I do.
you can straddle that.
Mm-hmm.
So you live in one and work in the other or something?
I live in Philadelphia, but my garden is in Wilmington.
Boy, that's a commute.
I tell you.
Okay.
It's at a friend's house, and she has sun, and I don't. What can I tell you?
Oh, smart move, actually. Smart move. And I'm sure you enjoy visiting the human as well as the plants.
And the dog, yeah.
Okay. Oh, and the dog, of course. I hope the friend didn't get third place in this contest. What can we do for you?
Okay. At this garden, there's in her yard, there's a large stand of running bamboo. It is just on the other side of her property line. And there's a little space, and I've created a lovely compost pile there.
Mm-hmm.
This is the second year that I've had the compost there. And then we have the vegetable garden out where the sun is. Well, she's recently gotten a new neighbor who really wants to get rid of this bamboo, as does my friend. And she's been knocking the things down for the last couple of years. But her friend has decided that they need to cut it down and then poison it. So they've cut down all the big stalks of bamboo all around the compost pile, and they're ready to pour chemical onto it. And my compost pile is sitting right in the middle.
Well, Hanna, I understand you're worried about your compost being tainted.
I'm worried about the poison, too.
Yes, there's bigger issues here. I mean, if they're going to use one of the commercial chemical herbicides, these things are human hormonal disruptors. They kill wildlife at an impossible rate. They destroy groundwater. And they're not very effective against running bamboo, which is perhaps the most tenacious aggressively growing plant out there. Uh-huh. So if there has been repeated cutting of the culms over years, and if people have really kept at it and been diligent, the culms should be getting much thinner and much weaker. Do you see any sign of that?
Yes, they are definitely, there are fewer of them in her yard, and they're not as vigorous. But she wants rid of them now.
Well, here's what you, some of this is going to have to be negotiation, you realize, because I'm going to suggest anyway that just for safety's sake, in case this person, you know, pops a clutch and does something crazy without warning people, that you move the compost and first clean out your garden, because it's that time of year anyway. Right. And then just cover your garden with what you have,
mm-hmm.
with the compost, and because then it would be out of that area, right?
Right.
Yeah. And then, you know, once the compost is out of the way, then talk to the person about the benefits of repeated cutting, which is what the American Bamboo Society recommends for people who planted running bamboo and then figured out what they're doing. Otherwise, consider renting a backhoe and having the area torn up and everybody share the cost and get all those culms out of the ground. Then the area can be replanted. If they don't go for that, you supply the 20% vinegar, which you can find in various online sources. Horticultural vinegar, 20% acidity. It lowers the pH of the soil to like 2. It's the surface of the moon. It's the most potent herbicide you can use. It's much more potent than any chemical herbicide you can buy. And make sure you get grain vinegar, not the stuff that's 20% acetic acid that's sold as a photographic chemical.
Okay.
You can get 20% acidity vinegar that's made from grain, and then it will destroy the roots of the bamboo. Make sure the soil is dry, and it hasn't rained in a few days, and it's not going to rain for a few more days. And do this. Nothing is going to affect the bamboo, by the way, after it goes dormant for the winter. No chemical or vinegar. So this has to be done before the soil freezes, or wait till the spring, because anything you do while the plant is dormant will not affect the plant, because the plant won't be absorbing chemicals or really even be affected by the vinegar, because it'll have shut down all its cellular production.
Okay. Now, this whole stand of bamboo is probably a quarter of an acre. So if we just work along the edge of it...
What you would do, you can contain it.
That'll keep it. Okay.
No. If you can mark the outskirts of the combs, you can either dig a foot deep trench and fill that with water, and the bamboo can't cross that, or you can have somebody come out with a ditch witch and dig a deep trench, and they can install what's called rhizome barrier, which is what professionals use who want to plant bamboo in a landscape, but know about it and know that it needs to be restrained. If you search the words American bamboo online, you'll go to the American Bamboo Society, and they have done all the research. They've collected all the research. They know how this stuff can be planted safely and can be contained safely. But herbicides, chemical herbicides in this case, would be really dangerous to the health of humans, the environment. And I don't think the odds are good that it would kill the bamboo. One of the big things I would urge you to do, if you're not going to go for the backhoe, is stall, because nothing is going to work well once the temperature gets too cold.
When in the spring would it be okay to?
Oh, the hotter and the drier, the better, if you're going to use the vinegar.
Okay.
And so the same would be true of a chemical herbicide. The hotter and drier the weather, the better. No, herbicides are not going to have any effect on a dormant plant.
Okay.
So you got time on your side, and other people will back me up on that.
Great.
All right, good luck. Fight the good fight.
Thanks so much, Mike.
Take care.
Okay, bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Teresa, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing very well. Teresa, how are you today?
Very good.
And where are you very good?
In Nacogdoches, Texas.
Oh, I've loved that name. I've never had the courage to try to pronounce that. I love the way it looks, though.
Now, or spell it?
Yeah. No, I won't put you through that. Yeah, it's a dyslexic's nightmare. Now, what part of Texas is that?
It's East Texas.
Okay, very good. Okay, we're just going to be cowards here. What can we do for Teresa in East Texas?
Well, the line crews have been in chopping down limbs that are hanging over power lines.
Of course they have, because it's the absolute wrong time of year to do that.
Well, it would be great to keep the ice off of the limbs later when the ice starts coming. So that's what they're doing, is keeping our electricity on.
Well, they think they are, Therese, but actually they're weakening the trees and increasing the chance the branches left behind will drop
in an
ice storm. Yeah, the trees are trying to go dormant. This is these people drive me crazy, because the time to do this is the middle of winter or early spring. But they have time on their hands now, so even though they know it weakens the tree, they want to get out and do it because they got the time.
My question has to do with all the stuff they've been cutting down. They have shredded it into the backs of their trucks, and we found out that they have to take it to the dump and dump it, and they pay, you know, to dump it. But we asked them if we could just have a couple of few loads up on our hill. We have a hill that's kind of out of the way, unseen.
Right.
So they dumped some of that up there for us, and I'm wondering if I work it with coffee grounds and stuff, if we can turn it into compost, and how the best way to do that would be.
Your instincts are correct. If you can get enormous amounts of high nitrogen material, which would be coffee grounds, that's an excellent example, horse manure, poultry manure, or in some parts of the country where the processing plants are close by, seafood shells, things like crab shells and shrimp shells. Those are the big four. Those are the naturally occurring high nitrogen items that can be mixed together with large amounts of wood chips and wood shavings, which, if you get it right, by the way, will steam and put out huge scalding clouds and look really impressive.
Ooh.
Oh, no, okay. It's great. That's nature, baby. That's the power of nature. They're making good dirt.
Okay.
When it looks like the richest black topsoil you've ever seen, then it's finished and you have made super triple premium compost.
Well, we do have access to horse and cow manure and chicken farm. You know, we have huge chicken houses out
here. Good.
And we have coffee shops here you know, I was planning on getting the coffee grounds. We can just take a big 5-gallon paint bucket and then go pick it back up the next week kind of thing. And
yeah, that would be good. Now, in a professional situation where they turn wood chips like this into compost, they will have turning machines. And they'll have the wood chips in windrows. And they'll have machines that go in and mix the stuff up so that the coffee grounds and the wood chips are constantly in motion and the wood chips are exposed to the coffee grounds on an equal amount. Horse manure is good. Poultry manure is good. Forget the cow manure. That's too,
okay.
That's too cold. That's not going to give you any benefit. And you want to be careful with the manures if there's a lot of bedding, because the bedding is the equivalent to the wood chips, whereby the coffee grounds are pure, so to speak.
Now, there's a lot of leaf material in this.
That's fine. That's fine. That's carbon. That's the same as wood. If you want to break it down, there's two different things that combine to make compost. Carbon, which we call dry browns, and nitrogen, which we call wet greens.
Okay.
Shredded leaves, wood chips, straw, hay, old corn stalks, old sunflower stalks. That's all carbon.
Okay.
And then nitrogen is typically the animal manures, but coffee grounds are very high in nitrogen, probably the highest non-animal product out there, and full of calcium and phosphorus and all these trace nutrients. There is no more ideal combination than your ground-up tree limbs and coffee. As long as you get enough coffee grounds, it's going to take a large amount. This is where one of those compost tumblers would come in perfect, because you would throw it all into the tumbler, and then you would turn the crank a couple of times a day, and that would imitate the motion that these giant machines do in commercial composting systems.
Okay. And how long does it take to do a batch?
It depends on your weather. You're warmer than the norm. It depends on how many coffee grounds you can get. It depends on how well you keep mixing them. This is a direct linear experiment. The more work you do, the more you put into it, the faster you're going to get compost.
Okay.
But it's easy to tell when it's done because it looks done.
Mm-hmm.
If you see big clumps of wood chips, it ain't done.
Okay. Would it behoove us to shred it any more with our shredder? We
absolutely
have a leaf shredder. Okay.
The finer the material, the bigger the pile, the better the mix of nitrogen and carbon, the faster it becomes compost.
Cool. Okay.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499.
Jeff, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Mike, hey, how are you today?
I'm doing good, Jeff. How are you?
Great. I'm here in Center City, Philadelphia.
Yeah?
I've been growing tomatoes out on my back porch here. And this year, for some reason, I got really poor yields. I got a ton of blossoms, but it would seem, I don't know if something was eating them, but it more looked like they were just falling off. They weren't turning into tomatoes. And I just don't have any idea what's causing it.
I'm going to guess that your porch broils in the sun.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, that's you didn't do anything wrong, man. When it gets to be 90 degrees or above, tomato pollen fries and the flowers are incapable of producing fruits. And as you know, this past summer had the most 90-degree days of any summer in our recorded history. So I would think that what happened is it was just too darn hot. Anytime the temperature gets so hot that it fries the pollen on your tomato flowers, you're done for like a week or 10 days. Those flowers can't produce any fruits. Now, the next run can, but as you know, this past summer, the next run probably the odds were it got hit by another blazing 90-degree day, which in an outdoor garden that got some shade, maybe half those runs would have survived. But if you're really full sun and baking, your tomatoes didn't have a chance this year. It was just too darn hot for them. So if that were to happen again, all you have to do is rig up some shade cloth or an umbrella and try and shade the plants after like one or two in the afternoon or whenever you can. miss them, get one of those things that they have in Australia to keep you from burning to death in their summers. Anything you can do to cool the air around them. But, you know, we have to hope that that was not Al Gore's prophecy this past summer, that that was an anomaly and it's not going to be that burning hot. But it actually sounds like your plants have the opposite problem of most city plants in that yours just got too much sun.
Yeah, they're actually in a great location. They get sun all day long, and so, yep, that's got to be it. I was wondering, you know, it was just, hey, you know, great blossoms and then, you know, getting nothing for fruit. So
well,
makes a lot of sense.
See, that's the key. If you had told me you hadn't gotten flowers, I would have said you were overfeeding them with nitrogen fertilizer or they weren't getting enough sun. But if you get flowers and the flowers don't produce fruit in your kind of location you've described in last year's summer, easy answer. The pollen just burned up time after time after time. And so if you know that, anything you can do to moderate that heat, if we get another summer like that, you'll get more tomatoes.
Gotcha. Yeah. So, okay, next year I'll throw a little shade out there.
That's all I think they would need, and then you'd get a lot more.
Perfect. Thanks very much.
All right, Jeff.
Yep, we'll see you now.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and keep shredding my fall leaves. They only come down once a year, but you have to collect enough to make all the compost and shredded leaf mulch you'll need from now through next fall. But don't go calculating your compost needs just yet, because we'll be right back with answers to your lilac questions and more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by the Espoma Company, makers of Biotone Starter Plus for new transplants, full of beneficial microbes and mycorrhiza for deeper roots and stronger plants. Espoma, a natural in the garden since 1929. And by Harvest Right. Harvest Right's home freeze dryer allows you to preserve your own freeze-dried food that can last 25 years. Meat, fruit, vegetables, and ice cream can be freeze-dried at home. More at harvestright.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we're in the stretch now, cats and kittens, in just a little bit. We'll get to the question of the week. How do I keep that nasty white stuff off of my lilacs? Because they're so disease-prone. And it looks like bees are eating my lilacs. What do I do? We'll answer both those questions after a couple more of your fascinating phone calls. At 1-888-346-9499. Felix, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hey, Mike, how are you?
I'm doing good, Felix. How are you, sir?
I'm well, thank you. And I know you'll ask this question. I'm well in Philadelphia, West Philadelphia.
Okay, very good. What can we do for you?
Okay, Mike, not too long ago, I purchased an ornamental pepper plant.
Right.
I took it home, and I'm sorry to say I killed it.
Oh!
I apparently watered it too much or gave it too much sun. I did ask when I purchased it, how should I care for it? And they said, keep the soil moist, which I did. But I think I kept it too moist.
No, and that was bad advice. Were you trying to keep this alive inside, Felix?
Yes.
Pepper plants, I know they sell these, quote, ornamental pepper plants, and they sell them next to the house plants. But that's kind of a cruel fraud because these plants really are outdoor plants. There's no difference between a, quote, ornamental pepper plant and any other hot pepper or even sweet bell peppers. They like to be outside in the summertime, and they can be brought inside by talented hands to survive the winter.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not like having a spider plant or a snake plant or a rubber plant or a ficus or one of these other kind of bulletproof house plants. They do need a lot of sun. And the key to watering any plant is to make sure it dries out between waterings.
Okay.
And more plants are killed by overwatering than any other human cause.
Okay. Let me ask you then, you don't recommend, and I heard you just say that these plants, they tend to want to be outside. It's not recommended that you try and get one to thrive in the inside?
If you have a bright, sunny, south-facing window, you can probably keep it alive over winter. If you want to have a nice indoor area with bright plants in it, go out and buy a simple shop light, a 4-foot-long shop light with 4-foot-long 40-watt fluorescent tubes. Certainly will cost you under $20 with the tubes. And then you find a place where you can hang that light, preferably in a window, so it'd be getting natural light and the light from the shop light.
Okay.
And then you could put 4 or 5 of these things in a row underneath that. Keep the tops of the plants 1 inch away from the bottom of the bulbs, and the plants will not only stay alive, they will thrive. They will flower and fruit for you all winter long.
Okay, that's good. Now, one other question, Mike. I harvested the peppers off of the plant, dried them out, and I'm thinking about trying to grow the plant from a seed. When you're planting, do you just plant one seed?
Seed starting is a whole different skill, Felix. Starting is almost the opposite of plant growing because you're trying to germinate a seed. So you would go get one of the 6-packs that you buy plants in at garden centers in the spring,
mm-hmm.
and you would buy a bag of what's called soil-free mix, professional mix, and then you would fill the container with the soil-free mix. You'd put 2 seeds in each cell. You'd keep it watered. You'd give it bottom heat. But then you need really strong artificial light. You need to keep an eye on that thing. You need to nurse them for 6 weeks. But no offense, you failed kindergarten, and now you want to go up to the PhD class.
I know.
Now, you can save those seeds. Dry them out real well, and then keep them cool and dry. And then I would go out and get a couple more, if you're going to do this, get a couple more ornamental plants, get the shop light set up, have a light hand with the water, maybe even put the plants into bigger, better pots, get that bag of soil-free mix I told you about. You keep a couple of plants alive over winter, then I would suggest you move up to seed starting.
Sounds good.
All right, Felix?
Okay, I certainly appreciate it. And let me say, I listen to you every week, and I thoroughly enjoy your show.
Well, thank you, sir. All right, man.
All right, thank you, Mike. Bye now.
1-888-346-9499. Richard, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
How you doing, Mike?
I'm doing good, Rich. How are you?
I'm doing a lot better than my tomatoes.
Where is Rich and his tomatoes?
We're in Beaver Creek, Ohio.
Beaver Creek, Ohio. Now, where in Ohio is that?
It's just outside of Dayton.
What can we do for Richard in Beaver Creek?
Well, you know, I have my garden back in my backyard, and I have trees back here. I'm the lowest of the 4 yards, but not drastically, but I am lowest. My plants sort of dying from the bottom up. I get one set of tomatoes. Before I can get another set red, the plants are dying from the bottom, and they die from, you know, to the top.
Well, that's...
I told it was light, and I moved them. I thought, well, it's in the shade. I'm at the lowest part. I'm getting too much water, so I moved my garden.
Good.
I'm still getting it. I'm in a perfect sunny place. Not over... I mean, I'm not underwater anymore at all. And I've asked about it at the garden shop, and they said the same thing. He said, everybody has this blight. The plant starts dying from the bottom, and it just progresses to the top of the plant.
Richard, you need to start going to a different garden center because people should not throw around terms like blight. Where you live in Ohio, there's probably 30, 40 different diseases that attack tomatoes, septoria, leaf spot, there's root rots. There are two blights, early blight and late blight. But the disease progression you're describing, where the lower leaves turn yellow, then turn brown, and the plant dies from the bottom up, that's always verticillium wilt, which should only occur when the plants are grown in the same spot year after year. When you move them to higher ground, did you reuse their soil or anything like that?
No, I rototilled a brand new place. I did grow tomatoes in the same spot last year, but I didn't get anything out of it. I went away right after I planted it. The garden went to crap.
Yeah, anytime you plant tomatoes in the same spot year after year, you risk this. So even 2 years in a row, it's possible. Now, interestingly enough, last year there was a late blight epidemic all up and down the East Coast that probably did strike your area. Are you growing in raised beds or flat ground?
Basically flat ground. I have mounds, but it's flat ground. It's
okay. Mounds are the worst possible thing you can do. I don't know who started this idea, but it's a very bad idea. All it does is expose the roots to drying out. Do you cage your tomatoes? Do you have them growing up inside sturdy round cages?
Yes.
And what do you feed your tomatoes?
Miracle-Gro and water.
Okay. Well, you are giving them the worst possible start in just about every direction. What I suggest you do is find one last spot that you really never have grown tomatoes in. You're right to avoid low ground, and they do need at least 8 hours of sun a day. And then what I suggest you do is you till up that soil and you build a true raised bed, in that you raise up the area in a 4 by 8 foot spot. No wider than 4 feet because you're not going to step in there. It can be as long as you want, but 4 feet wide. You fill that up with good compost, good soil-free mix. Try to stay away from nasty clay or anything that tomatoes have grown in. And you create one big mound, which you can either frame or not frame, but make sure it's about a foot higher than the surrounding ground. And then plant a couple of tomatoes in that, and then cage them, and no more Miracle-Gro, no more chemical fertilizer. That stuff is really toxic to plants. Just find a good source of yard waste compost. After the plants have been in the ground, for about 6 weeks, they start to grow in size. Give them an inch of good compost. And then if you really feel the need to give them a regular fertilization, get a natural fertilizer. Get a good fish and seaweed mix. And I guarantee if you start fresh in raised beds, you stay organic, stay away from the Miracle-Gro or other chemical fertilizers. Keep them away from that low area. Keep them away from the shade of the trees. You're going to have more tomatoes and you're going to know what to do with.
I hope so. I appreciate it.
All right, Richard, good luck, man.
Have a good day.
All right, as promised, it's time for the question of the week. Lilac troubles, white mold, and bark-eating bees. We begin with Linda in Westchester, PA, who writes, I've been noticing white stuff on the trunk of my lilac. Is it harmful? If so, what can I do? The lilac gets a lot of sun from around 1:30 until sunset. I'm sorry, Linda, but that's not a lot of sun. And it's the way wrong kind of sun for a lilac. Like roses, tomatoes, and other disease-prone plants, lilacs need morning sun to dry overnight dew and dampness off of their leaves. If there are any plants blocking that early sun, see if you can prune or remove them. Otherwise, do everything you can to increase airflow to the area. In addition, prune the lilac immediately after flowering next spring and every spring afterwards to open up the center and increase the internal airflow. Remove some entire older branches down at ground level first. Then take out a couple of younger branches that are crossing or otherwise restricting the airflow. Remove all the spent flowers as well. Do this immediately after the flowers have faded, and it'll improve the following year's flowering as well as keeping that white stuff at bay. We move on to Wynn in Haverford, PA, who writes, I have a, quote, patch of lilacs, that is, one big bush with multiple canes. Every year, a white flaky substance appears on the trunk and branches, as well as a white coating on many of the leaves. A lot of the branches that were covered with the dreaded white stuff are dead the following spring. What can I do? Well, I just can't exaggerate what notorious drama queens these plants are about airflow. My lilac, which is a very hardy, disease-resistant variety, is growing near a bunch of ancient inherited ferns. And anytime those ferns try to grow anywhere near the outskirts of the lilac, the wussy plant gets a white moldy coating on its trunk. When this happens, which is once every couple of years, I rip out the offending ferns right away, apologize to Her Majesty, and believe it or not, then I just wipe the white stuff off with a damp cloth. Occasionally, I've come home from vacation, and my Christmas in July has spread to a few leaves as well, so those leaves get pulled off and thrown in the trash. It can't be stressed enough. Lilacs need airflow. Don't plant them in a crowded area, and make sure their area stays nice and clear all around. If the white stuff still shows up, remove and destroy any affected leaves immediately and wipe that white stuff off. If you want to be fancy, mix some baking soda into the water you're using for your wash rag. Or even better, use compost tea for the wiping down. That'll remove all the gunk and leave a disease-fighting residue behind. In addition, never feed a lilac chemical fertilizers or use a wood, bark, or root mulch underneath it. Both of those things breed disease like mad. And as with roses, remove any old mulch in the spring and replace it with an inch or two of fresh yard waste compost. That'll feed the plant for the entire season and prevent any disease spores from incubating down there. And if the season is wet, cloudy, and damp, remove that mulch and replace it with fresh compost mid-season. We move on to Ed in Clarksville, Maryland, who writes, I thought I had an infestation of bees feasting on my lilac's branches, but now I'm not sure. They're aggressive, golden yellow, about an inch and a quarter long, and have wasp-like wings. What are they, and how do I get rid of them? Similarly, Dan in Reston, Virginia writes, we have wasp-like bees eating the bark on one of our lilacs. Nothing I've tried keeps them away. Help! Well, believe it or not, both of these D.C. area gardeners emailed me within a few days of each other just this past September. A surprising time of year to have this kind of problem, as wasps and hornets are pretty much done for the season at that point in time. That's right, the culprit here is wasps, not bees. Carpenter bees do famously hollow out breeding galleries in soft woods like cedar, but they don't strip the bark off of trees. Paper wasps and hornets, themselves a type of wasp, however, do perform this kind of mischief, so that they can use the bark as building material for their papery nests. Some sources feel they're also feeding on the sap that flows when they feed. Because they are wasps and not bees, they are aggressive and will sting if confronted, so be careful. And although these insects are a nuisance when they strip bark, they're also very useful predators that eat lots of pest caterpillars and other garden nuisances. Having a nest near a garden, in fact, has been shown to reduce the number of cabbage worms, a real nasty caterpillar, by more than half. So try and deter rather than kill them. Spray the bark at night with an organic repellent like neem or one of the garlic oil products sold for outdoor mosquito control. Or wrap the bark with strips of row cover, sheer curtain, or other gauzy material. Now, don't seal or otherwise try and repair any damage. Let the plant take care of that naturally. And finally, don't worry about this becoming a yearly problem. Nobody knows why the wasps pick certain targets in certain years, but we do know that each colony only lives for 1 year, and successive generations don't tend to return to the scene of the crime. Well, that sure was some great information about taking care of your lilacs now, wasn't it? Luckily, yous can review the question of the week in print at the Gardens Alive website. Just click the link at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Yikes! My producer is threatening to strip my bark if I don't get out of this studio. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499. Or send us your email, you're tired, you're poor, you're wretched, refuse teeming towards our garden shore, at garden@whyy.org. And remember, if you want to make thousands of dollars at home every hour, be introduced to the Nigerian minister in charge of knowing you to be a good and honorable person of excellent character who can launder money well and nobly, or otherwise want to be sent spam forever, don't tell us where you live. Or use the subject of your message in the subject line of your email. Or avoid my enormous attitude and get instant help and advice at our website, youbetyourgarden.org, where you can click through to the print version of the question of the week, find the hint-hint solution to hundreds of garden problems like yours, hint-hint, in our alphabetized archive of garden answers. Hint-hint, look there first, hint-hint. And or listen to this show and old shows over your computer and or download this week's podcast. Elizabeth Perez Luna is executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Ken Queter plays our theme song. Our engineer this week has been Fred Snyder. Rich Banowitz is our webmaster. Sarah Schuhart is his faithful internet companion. Lovely like a lilac is our intern, Jessica Mandan. As sweetly scented is Alexis Landis, who produces You Bet Your Garden for WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. As sickly as one in the shade is our editor, Al Banks. I'm bark-eating Mike McGrath, and I'll... Hey, I ain't half bad, you know? See you next week. What do you get when you graft a dirt doctor to a fruiting spur? I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden, master fruit grower Lee Reich and Texas organic advocate Howard Garrett join me for a very special show that will include your fabulous phone calls.